The Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Blackshaw Arts Hour. I'm Ellie and I am joined by...
Matt Boothman's here again.
Yay!
Talking about himself in the third person.
That is the best way to talk about oneself, I find. Ellie is happy to be here. today we are going to be reviewing Death of Stalin. Not as in the, like his
the
death,
film.
The film.
Yeah.
Yeah, the film. We are going to be doing a Stratton Alex art segment.
A sequel to the last Stratton Alex do art segment.
Exactly. What could it possibly be? Last time they wrote a book about a lion.
Oh, spoilers, Ellie.
They should have
You don't find
it
out
already.
It's a lion until the end.
If they're listening chronologically, it's all fine. If you're not listening to it chronologically, something's wrong. Something is wrong with you. They are going to be... Well, I'll leave it till it comes up, but it's very exciting. They're going to be doing a thing. And then we're also going to be bringing you part two of our possible Oscar nomination chat.
Yes, all of the Oscar bait movies or BuzzFeed's top 35 picks run down by us.
Yes, and we thought we were going to do quick fire, but Matt and I couldn't help but talk about things more than in a quick fire capacity.
So you get more of that this week.
Yeah, more bang for your no bucks. Also, Tilly is here again, so she's going to be meowing in the background.
Yeah, she identified with Jessica Pride, the toddler who was actually a lion.
And she's making herself heard. So, let's kick things off in the way we always do.
A review of a thing.
It's time for somebody's opinion.
Matt, what are you reviewing for us today? Like we just said that you were doing, but let's do it anyway. What are you reviewing for us today?
I'm going to do Armando Iannucci's new film, The Death of Stalin.
I'm excited. I haven't seen it, but I want to.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
So, spoilers for the end of the review, I guess.
Stop listening now.
Yeah. So this is Armando Iannucci, who we know from The Thick of It on the telly.
Yeah.
Also, Alan Partridge. And on the big screen, In the Loop, which was basically a film version of The Thick of It, but in America.
Okay.
And the only character... So it was all the same cast as The Thick of It.
Were they doing American accent?
No, no.
Oh.
It was a sort of a cross-continental storyline. So it had all of The Thick of It people, but interacting with an American cast as well.
Right.
Some of whom I think then went on to be in Veep, which is Armando Iannucci's American politics show.
Yes.
Anyway, all of that was very good. Politics is so balmy at the moment that Iannucci can't really do his usual political satire thing on current topical events.
Well, a lot of things that he did as part of The Thick of It, as ridiculous things, actually happened, didn't they?
There was a period in the news when the final series of The Thick of It was on when he kept having to pop up in news segments or columns saying, no, actually, we didn't have an inside line. We don't have an inside person who knew this scandal was coming. We just went with the most ridiculous possible thing we could think of, and then it ended up happening as we were airing by ridiculous coincidence.
Oh, that's mad.
So in the absence of... like normal politics to satirize, he's turned his eye to the past and the fall of, well, the death of Stalin.
Yeah.
So we're in Russia times.
Yes. Ye olde Russia.
Ye olde Russia times. And following the death of the leader of the party committee, Joseph Stalin, the rest of the committee jockey for influence. All arguing over who is actually next in the line of succession. Yeah. There's lots of taking Stalin's name in vain. Oh, this is what he would have wanted. He'd have loved this if I was the new leader. He's pointing in his dying moments. Is he appointing his successor? And it sort of moves on from that into everybody having dirt on each other and trying to blackmail each other into... allowing each other power,
right?
All these sorts of things. It's a star-studded cast of it has to be said, mostly men.
I guess if it's historical and it's politics,
the party committee was all dudes.
Yeah. Now,
so they've brought in a not lead cast, but like a sizable supporting cast part for Andrea Risborough as one of Stalin's children.
Right.
who appears at first to be the more level-headed of the two children, but turns out to be basically as potty as everybody else in Stalinist Russia at the time, which is interesting. But it's so we have people like Steve Buscemi as Khrushchev, Jeffrey Tambor as I forget the name, but
George Malenkov.
What, the one who is the technical next in line,
right?
But is a bit of an incompetent boob and can't
boob.
And is sort of very easy for the others to manipulate.
Okay.
Simon Russell Beale as Beria, who is the head of security, the guy in charge of all the Stalinist purges you might have heard about in history.
Yeah.
Who is largely like, he's not as prominent a figure in history, and the film makes a point of that by the end, basically saying that the rest of the committee almost conspired to erase him.
Oh.
So it almost functions as like a secret history of that. This, he's quite a prominent part of it, Simon Russell Beale as Beria. And it almost functions as like, here is this guy. Why have you never heard of this guy? Here's why.
Right.
Why have you heard of, why
so
have
it's
you
true
heard
that
Khrushchev
they tried to bury him?
Seems
he's not
to
being
be.
Paranoid.
I don't know. Oh. But yeah, it's kind of, why have we heard of Khrushchev and not of Beria?
Yeah.
Because Khrushchev won and history is written by the victors.
Yes, yes it is.
So it's a satire. So we get a balance of these scenes that could just be sort of out of the thick of it, but in period dress, of all of these people sort of having committee meetings or having these, making these backroom deals in corridors, that sort of thing. Trying to stab each other in the back or trying to manipulate each other into things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the comedy comes from them all being so immoral and so sort of a combination of immoral, incompetent, trying to lean on the ideals such as they were of the party and sort of weaponize those and use those against each other in that sort of, oh, this is what Stalin would have wanted sort
right.
of way.
Yeah.
Cut in with, well, not cut in, but sort of interspersed with some really quite tough sequences of the Stalinist purges led by head of security Beria.
Oh, so you've seen some nasty people abuse stuff.
Yeah, well, there's nothing very graphic. It's all kind of happening off screen. So you will see soldiers rushing into apartment buildings and sounds of gunshots.
Right,
or,
okay.
There's a few scenes set in Beria's jail where there are sounds happening that are clearly people being tortured and then killed.
Yeah.
But there's nothing actually graphic on screen. But it isn't shying away from the fact that that stuff was happening.
Yeah.
Which I think is important in something that is striving to be not just a comedy, but a political satire.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a bit of bite in a satire.
Yeah, you don't just want the clean, gentle bits, because that's not satire. That's not how that works.
No, exactly. If all you do is make it funny, then all you do is succeed. All you succeed in doing is taking these clearly bad people and associating them with comedy and laughter.
Yeah. Yes.
And it ends up sanding off their edges and making them kind of more like doing the opposite of what you kind of want to do with a political satire, which is make them more palatable.
Yes.
So that's not what you want. So you have to
have some real horror life in there to kind of rub up against their indoor squabbles.
Yeah.
To highlight their.
Yeah. So the film tempers it with, like I say, the scenes of the presence of torture, the presence of abduction and murder.
Lovely.
Yeah. And the evil in Beria, in particular, who is. He becomes very easy. He's the one that's holding all the power at the beginning because he's the one in charge of the secret police. So he knows everything about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He is in command of this force who will follow his orders and just go out and abduct and kill anybody he says. But by the end, his everything that he has abused that position of power to do, and it seems that he had some pretty awful sexual proclivities.
Mm.
I don't know how much of this is real history and how much of this is for the film.
Yeah.
But it seems that he did. And by the end, by the time everybody's decided that he's got too much power and needs to be ganged up on and taken out, mm-hmm. all of that becomes ammunition that right, the rest of the committee can use against
yeah,
him.
Yeah, because once it hits the public.
Yeah, paint themselves as the good guys.
Yeah.
They're not grabbing power in a they're not seedy little power grubbers grabbing power in a power vacuum. They are the good guys.
Yeah, sweeping in on their white horses.
Sweeping in on their white horses to take out the sexual predator, the destroyer of civil liberties.
They discovered
and so on.
His naughtiness.
Yep, and they took him out.
Yeah,
quick, sharp.
Good chaps, they all are.
So the style it's done in, all of the casts just use their accents.
Mm-hmm.
There's no that. Thankfully,
yeah, I hate
there's
that.
No attempt to do Russian accents.
Like, what's the point? Because there's no point in doing an accent because obviously the assumption is that they would actually be speaking Russian.
Yeah.
Not speaking English in a Russian accent.
Yeah. So Steve Buscemi is still American. Simon Russell Beale is still English. Jason Isaacs.
Oh yeah.
Shout out to Jason Isaacs as the general of the Red Army.
Yeah.
Who makes one of the best entrances I've ever seen in a film, where he doesn't come into it until about halfway through.
Yeah.
As a player, but it when major people are introduced in the film, it sort of goes into slow motion and gives them a little name caption
mm-hmm.
with their cabinet position, so you can kind of get an idea
yeah.
of what everybody's in charge of and who is going to be significant. When he gets his little name caption, he's in the middle of throwing off his cloak in slow motion to reveal a chest absolutely groaning with medals.
Oh, wow.
So nobody's doing a Russian accent, but he is doing an accent, which is a really broad northern one.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, so he's going a bit Sean Bean, potentially.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's a suggestion maybe that it's like he is... like representing the common man a bit
right.
more than the others.
Okay.
So he's got a bit more of like a working, what we understand to be
a
more of a working man's accent.
Yeah.
He's very good fun in it. But equally very ruthless.
Yeah.
He's fun because as soon as anybody starts talking about a coup and talking about, oh, there's this one guy in the committee that everybody's being very subtle and talking doublespeak about needing to take this guy out. There's a lot of scenes of people trying to conspire or sound each other out about possibilities of allying in conspiracies,
yeah.
but in totally deniable language,
yes.
just in case that
yeah,
other
yeah.
person
doesn't have the same viewpoint,
doesn't share, so that they can say, "Oh no, that's not what I was talking
yeah,
about."
Yeah, yeah.
But as soon as the general's brought in, it's like, "Oh, we're talking about a coup, are we? Good." When do we get started?
Just
I'll get my men. We'll get some guns
through
in.
It. Yeah. Oh my god, that's very refreshing.
Yeah, and it is. It slices through all of the political talk that
yeah.
all of the committee members
and
have been doing.
And obviously creates comedy.
Yeah. So yeah, it's so I will say the fact that nobody is like in any way attempting to appear like period accurate Russian.
Mm.
Means I don't think there's any excuse for the movie to be as white as it is.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So you know, it has our usual I think this one we can waive the usual concerns about like
gender
because that's who it would have been.
Yeah.
And they do seem to have made an effort to not just brush aside some of the women who were involved.
Yeah.
But
they could have gone colorblind casting
yeah.
quite easily. That's
yeah.
a shame.
Because it's yeah. quite it's a well-designed film in a lot of other ways. I was noticing some of the costuming choices and how they affect character. Like Malenkov, Jeffrey Tambor's character, is in these very very loose kind of ill-fitting suits that just make him look like there's no shape to them. They just look like a sort of a falling curtain of
yeah.
material off him. And they just... absolutely accentuate this feeling of him being somebody who's kind of he just blends into the wallpaper and is totally ineffectual,
right?
Sort of amid all of the grandeur of all of the like Stalin's Dasha and the Kremlin and all of these other locations. So whereas you know you contrast that with things like Simon Russell Beale's Beria, who is always very immaculate in his
yeah.
In his three-piece suit,
yeah. Well, that sounds really cool. I mean, I think the one thing, other than the sort of slightly limited release it had, It was on at sort of odd times at my local cinemas. The thing that maybe put me off and made me choose other films over this is that I worried it might be too dry because it is an out-and-out political satire. Did it feel dry at points?
No. Like I said, a lot of it does come from... the comedy is coming from the power dynamics and the... in the same way as things like W1A or 2012, the BBC series, sort of revel in the absolute nonsense of corporate speak. The Death of Stalin kind of revels in the ridiculousness of that political doublespeak of trying to say something without sounding like that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So a lot of the comedy does come from that, but then there is the comedy of people being incompetent and ridiculous at their jobs as well. And just there's some physical stuff, like one of the bits of compromat blackmail material that Khrushchev gets on Malenkov is that Malenkov wears a corset, which he notices because Malenkov, being not such a snappy dresser, has left the tails of the corset dangling out of the end of his shirt. So there are these slightly more up the slapstick end sort of things as well, especially near the beginning when we're dealing sort of with the immediate aftermath of the collapse and later death of Stalin. There's a lot of physical comedy of them trying to everybody running into the room and pantomiming their grief because that's the expected reaction.
They've got to try and give the biggest reaction possible.
Yeah, pantomiming their grief. Everybody, there's a running gag about everybody kneeling in the puddle of wee that he's let go.
Oh, God.
And... and then all of them trying to... I guffawed out loud at that. All of them trying to pick him up and put him in a more dignified position on a bed instead of lying on the floor where he is. And the fact that none of them know how to carry him and they end up basically dropping him on top of Paul Whitehouse. So there is slapstick in there as well as all of the slightly more highbrow satire.
Yeah.
But like when I say highbrow, only in that it's not physical comedy. It's still...
It's verbal.
Yeah, it's making fun of people's the ridiculous lengths that people will go to hold on to power in that situation.
Great. Well, it sounds like something I would enjoy. And so I guess hopefully it will be available other than the cinema soon-ish.
Yeah, I would think so.
Although I have Googled it and apparently it's being shown in cinemas in America from March of next year.
Yeah, it took a while to... I think it had been released here before it even got a distribution deal in the States. Because I think I saw the announcement when Iannucci announced on the internet that it was coming to the States.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, so March 2018, if you're in the States, that's when you'll be able to watch it. And I suspect there may be some kind of either an online streaming or a physical DVD release sooner than that in the UK.
I would expect so, yeah.
Yeah, great. Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Look it up when it's out.
Yeah, I will do. Do you have any thoughts about what you might be reviewing next time?
I'm a bit behind on the DVD, on the film release schedules at the moment, so I'm not 100% sure. I know we've run down in recent shows, we've run down what's on the way.
Justice League is coming out... I think it's maybe already out for our listeners.
I know I'm seeing that, so I can certainly talk about that.
Great.
My thing about that so far is that all the posters look like they're advertising the Madame Tussauds show of Justice League.
Are they all in waxworky poses?
Yeah, it's something about the lighting just doesn't make them look real.
Well, that's a shame.
But yeah, that'll be an interesting one to talk about in the context of other superhero things, especially given that we had a bit of a chat about troubled production processes on superhero films when we talked about Thor and by extension of Age of Ultron. And it sounds like this one's been through a few similar things. Yeah. Trying not to prejudge it before seeing it. But
well, that's good.
It sounds like it's had some troubles.
Well, a couple of films I saw recently. I saw A Bad Mum's Christmas.
Ooh, I know you were looking forward to that because you're a big fan of Bad Mums.
Yeah, which was because it surprised me at how good it was. This was also very good. Really funny. The kind of main premise is that the mothers of the bad mums featured in the first film come to visit for Christmas. And the casting is just absolutely genius. They're really, really fantastic. So then it's all about kind of examining then your relationship with your mother as an adult. So in the first one, it's very much about mums looking after their kids. and how that works. And this is much more about the kind of the adult relationship you have with your mother.
So do you start getting a bit of an idea of why some of the bad mums mm-hmm. have turned out the way they've turned out?
Very much so. So yeah, that was really, really enjoyable, very funny, and also very heartwarming. So I would definitely recommend that. And if you are a fan of really attractive men taking their clothes off and dancing, that's also a reason to see that film.
Okay, they're releasing that quite for a Christmas film. They're releasing that quite early, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
If that's going to be out of cinemas before Christmas happens.
Yes, I would assume so. I don't know if it's because they felt they couldn't compete with the other films coming out at Christmas.
Maybe.
But I mean, I had no objection to getting festive early, so hopefully it's doing quite well. And I also saw Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh yeah, how was that? Another star-studded cast.
Oh my goodness, the cast. I had to literally restrain myself from doing a little clap when Judi Dench enters the train with Olivia Colman, who's playing her maid. And I was just like, oh, such wonders. The cast was incredible. I was really surprised, pleasantly so, by Michelle Pfeiffer. I just guess I've not really considered her as an actress before, like not really had a lot of thinking about it. But she was absolutely fantastic.
She showed a lot of range in Mother.
Oh, good, good. She was really good. I went to see it with my sister and my cousin, who are both absolute super fans of the books. So I got the full rundown afterwards as to which bits they'd added in or tinkered with. And there weren't any changes that they felt they were upset by as super fans. So I think they did really well. There was just a couple of like lines where it suddenly felt like they'd gone a bit Hollywood.
Okay.
There's at one point a character, this isn't a spoiler, one character says, "Why aren't you dead yet?" I just thought, that's slightly incongruous.
Doesn't sound like something Christie would have written.
No, exactly. So that was quite jarring. I think the whole audience felt it was jarring, because everyone sort of looked around like, did they just say that? That doesn't seem right. But it's great. I mean, even if you know the story as I do, it's still just a brilliant collection of performances, so yeah. Well worth watching.
And if you don't, like, it is one of the great Agatha Christie Poirot mysteries.
Yeah.
So like if the first time you experience the this particular mystery and its resolution is like on a big screen with good production values with that cast, I think that's going to be quite impressive.
Exactly. And of course, the wonderful Paddington, I'm assuming wonderful, Paddington 2 has
come
out.
I'm hearing it's wonderful.
I've heard lots of good things too, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And the other thing that will obviously be coming out not too far away now is Star Wars, but that's not till December.
No, we normally don't end up talking about Star Wars on the show because falls in our festive break.
Exactly, it does. So we may or may not talk about it.
Which, to be honest, I'm happy with. I'm happy to be able to watch those films with all my critical thinking turned off.
Yes. And it's not like it's not getting enough coverage, is it?
I know. Just enjoy the people in the white plastic get hit with the glowy sword.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like we might be talking about Justice League. We might be talking about Paddington 2. Our options are open for next time. If you obviously have any preferences, please do get in touch. You can find all our contact details at blackshawonline.com. So Alex and Strat are going to do some art.
Strat and Alex do art.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, art.
Oh, I mean, it looks lovely, mate.
So this time we're going to have a little follow-on activity. Last time we had the wonderful book Jessica Pride Goes to School.
Yeah.
Written by the two of you.
Yeah.
This time we would like for you to design a cover for the book.
Okay.
Are we going to end up selling it? Is that what the final challenge is going to be?
Yeah.
Yes.
Publish and market this book. All proceeds to Black Shore Theatre.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Just to me. So you will have 15 minutes to complete the task. This is not a joint team activity anymore.
Right.
This part of it is down to you two as individuals.
Right. There's been a creative conflict since the book was written.
A dynamic rift between the two of us.
So you have available to you brown paper, pens, and also coloured pens.
Ooh.
You have 15 minutes. Do you have any questions?
So this is a design, so it doesn't have to be.
You're not being judged on the quality of your drawing.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Okay. I mean, with a chance.
You're sure about that?
It would be helpful if we can tell what things are.
Okay, cool.
But no, you won't be judged on the quality of your drawing. It will be based on layout and kind of general appearance and
overall
theme
concept.
And concept.
Yeah. So in my day job, I work with designers, and they call this stage the scamp.
Oh.
This is the rough scamp that gives you the idea of the layout and what the content of the design will be, and gives you just enough information to visualise what the cover's going to be like without necessarily being near the finished product.
Yeah.
So obviously the only information that needs to be on the front is the title and the authors, which
So my name, much bigger than Strat's, obviously.
Well, look, it's up. You're designing it. It's up to you. Whether you think that will gain you points or not, I don't know. to recap, if you've not yet listened to the last episode, which of course you should do, this story is about a lion girl attending school and becoming accepted by her peers. It's beautiful. It will move you possibly to tears. So do listen to the last episode to catch up on that.
Yeah, turn this one off. Go back. Listen to the other one.
Yeah, start
come
this
back
again.
To this one.
Great.
Done.
Okay, so your 15 minutes starts.
What?
I thought I had a question. No, it's cool.
You sure?
Yeah.
You can ask questions during the 15 minutes if you need to.
Oh, that's fine then.
Okay, starts now.
The Blackshaw Art Hour.
Ooh, that's a tasty treat.
And we'll check back in with them and see how they got on very shortly.
I'm excited.
Good, I'm glad you're excited. And there will be pictures online as well.
Yeah, so you can read along with your audio experience.
Yeah. Right, so now we're going to return to a conversation Matt and I started last time. We are talking about the potential Oscar nominations, the classic Oscar bait films that have been picked up by BuzzFeed.
And since we began that conversation, we were going down the list saying which ones we'd heard of and which ones we hadn't, among other things. I've started to see a lot more of them advertised on buses and things.
Oh, good. So they are possibly things which hadn't fully come into the UK realm, but are on their way. So let's have a little listen to what those films might be.
Next.
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
That's not a film. That's just some things that you want to go and look at.
I have no idea what this is.
Oh, it's Frances McDormand in the central role.
Okay. A woman who puts up billboards just outside her small Missouri town, calling local police out on the lack of leads in the case of the rape and murder of her daughter. Sounds intense, but quite relevant to current events.
Written and directed by Martin McDonagh. Now I want to go and see it.
Okay.
The guy in Bruges.
And Seven Psychopaths.
Yeah, and various things for the stage before that. The Hangman is one of his.
Okay, let's go see it.
Yeah, sure.
It's weirdly titled, but other than that, ticks the boxes for interest for me. Mudbound. So this premiered at the 2017 Sundance Film Festival. Apparently everyone cried.
Okay.
It's about how a white family and a black family find themselves intertwined for better or for worse in Mississippi during World War II. Oh, making me cry already. Okay, so I haven't got any more information on that. But
Netflix
it sounds
acquired
interesting.
It just after the premiere. So.
Oh, so it'll be on Netflix?
Yeah, I don't know whether that means it'll be on Netflix here. It might be just the US, but worth looking out.
Yeah, so the point being made in this article is that this may actually be a reason for it not to do very well at the Oscars.
Oh, yes.
Because they don't like Netflix. They don't see it as kind of on the same level as cinema release.
Yeah, or they don't like the tactic of Netflix releasing on the same day as the cinema.
Right.
They feel like, I think it's part of
the qualification
process for being allowed to be nominated for an Oscar is you have to have run for a certain amount of time in an LA theatre and nowhere else.
Oh, wow. Okay. Such rules.
Yeah. Stick in the mud, the lot of them.
Yes, very relevant because that film, as we just said, Mudbound. Okay, the next one is Darkest Hour.
It's that Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman wearing a fat suit.
playing Churchill.
I mean, he looked remarkably like Churchill.
The name of this film didn't ring a bell, but the Gary Oldman plays Churchill film rings a bell.
Yeah, you've heard about that. I have too. Purely probably from my interest in World War II, I will probably see it. but haven't. It does make the point here that it ticks an Oscar's box in terms of physical transformation.
Yep.
But maybe not a lot else.
Yeah, directed by Joe Wright, who did Atonement.
Oh, and Atonement.
Various other things. He did that adaptation of Anna Karenina.
I haven't seen that.
No.
Call Me By Your Name.
This one I've heard a fair bit about.
I have heard nothing about this.
Okay. Some of it I can't say on the radio.
Is it sexy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a... it's described in the BuzzFeed article as a lush gay romance.
Oh, okay.
So it's based on a novel. And it's got Armie Hammer in it.
Oh, it's also described as a stunning, searingly erotic film.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's probably the safe for broadcast way of...
Yes.
I'll tell you off air.
okay.
It's birthed a meme of... there's a sequence in it where Armie Hammer does a dance. And there is a Twitter account you can follow where they've recut the dance to various different songs.
Awesome. I'm
interested.
So you
can see Armie Hammer dancing to lots of
different
songs.
He's a very handsome man.
Yeah. So it's a gay romance. It's come under fire for casting two straight people in the leads.
Okay. Do you have to be gay to play gay?
That's a big question. No, but how many openly gay actors are there getting work?
I don't know.
And would it maybe be better to...
Yeah.
I find stop this... giving straight people easy roles. Not stop giving them roles, but like get a little bit of fairness and parity out there.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because from my point of view, if I'm casting a play, the sexuality of the actor has literally nothing in my mind.
Yeah, it's for individual casting decisions, it's difficult to know whether it should have a bearing or not. It's one of those systemic things
across
that when you look at the industry as a whole and go, oh, well, straight people are getting all the roles, including the gay ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all the straight white men, right?
And a lot of gay actors are excluded from playing straight roles. So
which is
the
ridiculous.
Knife does not cut both ways.
It should. I bet there's loads of not out gay men.
Well, this is why many gay men are not out in Hollywood, because it excludes them from playing the leading man. They're left with the funny best friend.
At number 22, The Disaster Artist.
A James Franco vanity project. Oh no, could have easily become a James Franco vanity project. Sorry, I'm skim reading.
But it is a James Franco project.
Yes.
He directs, stars in, and co-produces. It's a tragicomedy about the making of The Room. Okay.
That film that is generally touted as one of the worst ever.
Yeah, the indie film. Okay, well, that sounds just very silly.
I mean, awards tipped, presumably, because it sounds very inside Hollywood.
Yes, it's basically an inside film joke.
It's a film about a film.
Number 23 is The Shape of Water. You made a noise when I mentioned this earlier.
I've heard a load about this. This is Guillermo del Toro's next movie.
I do love him.
Where Sally Hawkins falls in love with a fish monster.
Sure.
And for some reason... And I don't know how this is going down in terms of making people want to watch the movie or not. Sally Hawkins and Guillermo del Toro have both been very sure in interviews to clarify that, yes, there is sex. There is fish sex.
Okay.
And it is explicit.
Okay.
Fish monster sex, sorry. Not just a normal fish monster. A humanoid fish monster.
Okay.
Apparently it's really stunningly good.
Okay, I'll reserve judgment. All I can think about is the smell of fish now. Wonder Wheel.
Not heard of this one.
Me neither.
Oh, it's Woody Allen. Can we skip it?
Yep. I, Tonya. Never heard of it.
Okay, it's about disgraced Olympic figure skater Tonya Harding.
Okay.
I've heard of her, vaguely, in the back of my mind.
It's apparently a dark comedy.
Yeah, it's got Margot Robbie in it. She's usually good, even when faced with poor material, as we've seen in Suicide Squad.
Number 26 is Downsizing.
Yeah, seen trailers for this.
Okay.
It looks like an odd concept.
Matt Damon and Kristen Wiig.
Yeah. So it seems like one of these... Every so often you get one of these sci-fi movies that doesn't have all of the flashy Hollywood trappings of sci-fi and robots and
flashy
lights and things. Well, the concept of it is that everything's very overcrowded and nobody has enough space to live in. So somebody pioneers a process where you can shrink yourself.
Oh.
And then... You can live on the same size plot of land.
Oh my god.
And it can be like a palace. And so you end up with these two social strata of people who've downsized and become tiny.
Oh my
goodness. And people who can't afford it. So it could be interesting.
It does sound really cool.
Quite a kind of social commentary kind of thing.
I might get squashed. Number 27, Molly's Game. Now this has got Idris Elba in, so
yeah,
interested.
And Aaron Sorkin written.
Yeah, Jessica Chastain is also in it. It's another former Olympic. Nah. A former Olympic skier who ended up getting arrested for running an exclusive high-stakes power game for a decade.
Yeah, so the thing with Aaron Sorkin movies is they always have scenes of people walking through corridors.
Yeah.
So with this one, do you think it'll be scenes of people skiing down hills and having conversations?
I hope so.
Me too. Next.
Film stars don't die in Liverpool.
Is that true?
I don't know. It's got Jamie Bell and Annette Bening.
I have heard some vague things about this.
Okay, it's about a real life love affair between classic Hollywood actor Gloria and Peter Turner, an aspiring British actor several decades her junior.
So the main piece of information I've heard about this is that the director clearly understands how good looking Jamie Bell is and shows him off to good effect.
I'm now interested in this film.
And the BuzzFeed article cites a sweaty, impromptu, incredible disco dancing routine in Gloria's apartment.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I'm really glad that it's obviously it's another biopic, which is interesting, but I'm really glad that it's showcasing a relationship between an older woman and a younger man, because we're force-fed the reverse so frequently.
Yeah,
which we've talked about on the show before. So I just hope that they're not doing it too much in a "ooh, isn't it weird" way, because that would be frustrating, because we're taught that the other way is normal.
Yeah, it'll be a case of whether it shows characters in the movie responding badly to it or whether the movie itself responds badly to it.
We shall see.
Yep.
Hostiles
with Christian Bale. A Scott Cooper movie. I've not seen the other movies of his cited: Black Mass with Johnny Depp, Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges. Don't know, not much interest.
So this seems to be Captain Joseph J. Blocker is reluctantly sent on his internal and external journey to return a family of Native Americans safely to their home and Holy Land. And it sounds like it's all focused on Bale, and you don't really get any sense or development of the Native characters at all.
Okay, white savior narratives.
Here's one we're more excited about: Murder on the Orient Express.
Huzzah! Now, I mean, I know how it ends. Do I still want to see it? I know who done it.
We do know who done it, because we love the Poirot and the Agatha Christies.
Maybe they'll change it, and that'll be the twist.
That would be so weird. I hope not. But it's got an incredibly incredible sounding cast. Kenneth Branagh's a little bit write the theme tune, sing the theme tune in this one. He directed it, and he stars in it. And I'm not always a big fan, so we'll see. But it's got Penelope Cruz, Michelle Pfeiffer, Judy Dench, Josh Gad.
There he is again, we promised.
Yes.
Daisy Ridley.
Oh, yeah. And I remember hearing Josh Gad being interviewed about it, because they've been promoting it like for ages and ages. And he was just saying how overwhelmed he was to be acting with the people he's acting with. He's like, I'm just some American guy, and there's all these British people. They're so wonderful. It's pretty...
He's right. We are better.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. Wonder. So this has got Jacob Tremblay, who played the child in Room, which was fantastic. And he gave a fantastic performance. And the critics seem to say he was really good, but he's probably just really good because he's a child star and they've just put someone who is the character in the role, so they don't need to do any acting. So I'm hoping that this is him proving them wrong, which I believe they are wrong. He's playing a child. An 11-year-old called Oggie, who's a fifth grader who enters public school for the first time following years of surgeries that have helped him to breathe, see, and hear. Those procedures have saved his life but left him with scars across his face. And his parents, Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson, worry about the reaction of his classmates. So I think it's going to make me cry.
I feel like I've seen trailers for this for ages.
I haven't seen any.
And it's not out yet.
No. I hadn't heard of it at all before reading this article. I think it's something that I will enjoy and cry at. And I hope that he does get some recognition, because I just feel like he was robbed last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to do all the prosthetics thing to get recognised.
No. all the money in the world. Haven't heard of it.
Oh, it's Ridley Scott, who is very hit or miss these days.
Yeah.
He seems to be only really as good as the material that he's given to direct.
Yeah. So this is another true story. It's the infamous kidnapping of Getty Sion John Paul Getty III.
Okay. More physical transformation and prosthetics.
Yes.
Of, I don't know whether we should talk about him or not.
Well, we'll say it.
Yeah, it's Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Yeah, following recent allegations, we don't really want to talk to him. Or about him, or to him. But again, yeah, it's another load of prosthetics, which ticks Academy boxes, but I think it's pretty unlikely he's going to get any nominations.
Yeah, he might be persona non grata.
Yep. Michelle Williams is in it. I love her. She's very good. She's playing John Paul's mother, Gail, who basically has to campaign for to get her son back, who's been kidnapped. So, yeah, if it wasn't for that man, I'd be really interested in seeing that. The next one is The Post. This is Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks, and Steven Spielberg. So between them, they already have 8 Oscar statues, 41 nominations.
Leave some for everybody else.
They've all had very long careers, to be fair. So, I mean, who cares what it's about, right?
But in case anybody's interested, it's about Washington Post editor Ben Bradley.
Yeah. So potentially really boring.
Oh, and a publisher, Kay Graham, played by Streep, fighting the Nixon White House to print the Pentagon Papers. So, I mean, kind of timely.
Yeah.
Given that...
I wonder if they thought about that.
Maybe. No, there's potentially another impeachment in progress in the White House right now.
Matt's doing little scheming hands.
Yeah.
And it's got lots of other good-sounding people in it. So that may well go down well with the Academy. And then we've got The Greatest Showman, which I feel like has been advertised for a million years.
Oh, this is really weird. Like, we're working out, like, that we're looking in different places for all our film news, because I've heard nothing about this.
Oh, okay. Well, so it's the star of it's Hugh Jackman playing a... Well, so it's a musical, because Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
And it's also a biopic of a circus founder.
P.T. Barnum.
That's right.
The circus founder.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's probably one that's likely to get some music nominations at least.
Same lyricists that wrote the La La Land book last year, which so they've got an Oscar for a song.
Yeah, exactly.
But they might get another.
So I think that may well be a winner. And then finally, a film called Phantom Thread, which I've heard nothing about.
Me neither. I've heard of Paul Thomas Anderson, though, the director.
And it's got Daniel Day-Lewis in it, who didn't he retire like 8 times already?
Oh, he's one of those.
But he is the only person to win 3 Best Actor Academy Awards. So maybe he's trying for a 4th.
So it's about a fashion designer who becomes infatuated with a young commoner who he makes his muse.
That
sounds like, yeah.
No thanks. Well, we've ended on a down note there. but some films we are really looking forward to seeing. So if you didn't have plans for all the films to watch, now you have plans, right?
Yeah, and get your Oscar sweepstake bets in early. Gamble responsibly.
Yes.
But if you like a little flutter on the Oscar results, maybe something's caught your ear.
Yes, right up in your ear. We're going to check back in.
See how they've been getting on.
We're going to see how the lads have been getting on with their book cover designs. So you've had your full 15 minutes. How did it go?
It went pretty well. I had an idea almost straight away and just ran with that.
Okay.
I'm happy with it.
Great. Can you talk us through your design, please?
Yeah, absolutely. It is... I'm going to turn
obviously,
it...
be as descriptive as possible for our listeners.
It's a picture on the front of a book. So what I've done is I've got, it's in portrait as opposed to landscape. There is a white border around the entirety of the book.
Yeah.
The main image is an oval with the back of a small child's head. In this case, it's Jessica facing towards Safari Primary School, which is the primary school that she's attending.
Yeah.
It's in an oval. That oval has a white border as well.
Yeah.
The main body of text is Jessica Pride goes to school. It's in yellow.
Yeah.
And underneath the oval is by Strat and Alex, and that's lovely. In pink.
Yeah.
And the main sort of area of the book that isn't either an image or text is a dark navy blue.
Lovely. Oh. Very schooly.
Yeah, that's kind of... She's wearing a small boater, a small straw boater.
She goes to a posh school.
Clearly. I don't know why that... It just amused me, the small idea of a small lion cub wearing a straw boater.
Well, that was in the initial... That never made it into the story that it was going to be a lion in a hat.
Oh, yeah!
But we never got the hat, so you've...
Yeah,
you've brought the hat.
Subconsciously brought the hat back.
Mm. Well done.
Yeah, I like that there's a suggestion of a mane under the hat.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't give away the reveal.
Yeah.
But that once you've read the book and you know what it is, it is a satisfying looking image then.
Yeah, because it also just could be a small girl with red hair.
Mm.
Mm. Think on.
Great. Matt, do you want to grill Strat on his?
Sure. Yeah. Strat. Show us your thing, talk it through.
A pretty straw idea. You'll notice, I think, where I maybe started running out of time. And I also discovered during this that I can't draw fish.
Okay.
I gave it a good go. So, my disparate is, you know those kind of like read with your kids kind of books? They're kind of landscape, but quite big and almost like more square.
Stop rustling that paper.
Yeah, sorry. Try to get it to not...
We can see it.
Yeah.
We can see it.
So it's a landscape thing. I'm thinking Jessica Pryde series of kids books, got some legs. So I want my design to be instantly recognisable on the shelves. When you walk into the bookshop, you're looking for Jessica Pryde books for your kids.
Cause nice.
Of course they want Jessica Pryde books.
Why wouldn't they?
That's the first thing you see. So Jessica Pryde takes up, I would say, a good half of the cover. It's the kind of the main thing. This is a Jessica Pryde book. And then next to Jessica's above, Pryde's below. Next to Pryde, I've got a little box that makes Pryde as long as Jessica. It kind of fills in that line. And that's where Go to School and our names are. Obviously, my name is slightly out of the box, but we can fix that. It's just a kerning issue. That's a kerning issue. The typesetters, they'll sort that out. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
So Goes to School has become very much a subtitle.
Absolutely. So this is Goes to School, then it will be Goes to the Moon. I don't know. She's going everywhere. She's doing anything she wants.
She's a small lion cub
Whoa. She skipped years of astronaut training there.
Hey. Are you going to deny anyone the right to go to the moon?
Absolutely.
Moon denier.
Not a plucky lion cub, no.
Okay. Fair enough.
And so underneath that, then, I wanted to bring in some of the themes of the book. So I've got a little fish in some water for when they're playing in the water. Got a little frying pan with a little plastic egg in that when they're in the home corner. I've got a little sheet of music where they were singing. I was also some space up here going to have like poking out a piece of paper with a handprint on, but I didn't have time. But at the bottom, sort of like winding its way around and underneath and on top of all those things, there is the tail of a lion. Oh, so that's what that is. I'm pretty sure, I don't know what lion's tails look like, if I'm totally honest. So it's a brown tail with a scraggly end. And then bring all of that together. So, yeah. And then I thought, as a set, it'd be quite nice. You could always have Jessica Pryde and then some things that you're going to experience or she's going to use in her adventure. And then, like, a bit of Jessica as well.
That's very well thought
that's
through.
That's my design, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a few comments about Strats.
Yeah.
I really like the idea that you've gone for in terms of setting up a series and having linked aesthetic. I think that's really important and great foresight there.
Thank you.
I feel like the illustrations you've chose don't necessarily represent the content of the book in as clear a way as you may have intended. The fish in the water, I mean, I'm going to take a punt here and say the water that they were playing with in the classroom probably didn't have fish in.
Oh, it's not a real fish. It's a fake fish. This is a toy. Not good enough. I don't think I explained that good enough. So these are things that would actually be in the book. So as you read through, that fish would be on the floor. That frying pan would be there. They'd be holding that music. So as you go through the book, that illustration would be there. That was the idea.
I was also concerned about the fried egg and that does not appear at any point in the story because they talk about chips and antelope as being their favourite foods.
Yes.
But okay.
There's a design concept. It's just the stuff. Things, there's yeah. a really, yeah. What you see on the front of the book, you are going to see
yep.
during the book as well.
I get
yeah. Yeah.
Matt, yeah. What comments do you have on either design?
So I think layout wise, I think Strats is really strong, and having the text nice and sort of big and prominent, like he said, for shelf placement is great, and also for a book aimed at younger children, like the big text helps with readability. It's good for that to take up a lot of the cover. But I agree with Ellie in terms of, I think Alex's illustration idea does a much better job of setting up and summarizing the story and setting up a nice kind of anticipation of what is going to be contained.
I think also what I like about Alex's is it's a fairly traditional design that is kind of recognisable as a template you could use for a series. I think that Strats is maybe it's even too modern for my taste is the problem. I feel like Alex's is slightly more structured, and the kind of the template of the blue background with the oval title at top and credits at the bottom would work really well for the future series of the books. And you could even take through that kind of image of the back of her head and then the setting of where she is. That would
maybe
work
the moon
for...
in front of her, like in a little
exactly, and she could have a little astronaut helmet.
It's almost
thing
a
on.
Rocket there, anyway. She's looking
yeah.
at a rocket.
Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah. So I feel like in terms of longevity, although Alex may not have actually put that into his thinking behind the design, he has hit upon a design that would work in that sense as well. Yeah. So I'm afraid for me, my vote's going to go with Alex.
I think I'm with you on this one.
Okay.
Congratulations, Alex.
Thank you very much. But what we can take solace is in the fact that we are creating these books, so we were always going to be the
that
winners.
That is true. We are the winners, really.
And therefore multimillionaires.
So does that mean I get a point as well?
Not in this instance, no. In terms of like the competition, but like the going forward, if we were to make the books, we would both be winners in that respect, because we'd be able to combine the concept of your marketing strategy and my design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if there are any publishers out there listening and are interested in the children's book deal, I think this is pretty much bang on the money.
Oh yeah, we're pitching.
Hey, we are pitching.
Okay, we're itching for a pitching. Great.
Pitkins itching for a pitching.
Oh, I am.
Oh,
I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Great. Well, thanks very much, guys.
Hey, no problem.
No worries.
Well, there we go. A worthy winner in Alex.
I thought so.
In fact, coming up, we should pre-warn you so you can get your voting fingers ready. In the next couple of episodes, we will be doing exciting art segments that require your input, because Matt and I could not decide which was the best.
We didn't think we were worthy judges.
No, it was so close run. So there will be the opportunity in the coming weeks to vote for your favourites. We will give you warning and full information on how to do that in the upcoming episodes.
But it's likely to involve the website twitter.com.
That is correct. You can do a poll there, I believe. So the last thing I'll say is, if you haven't already, do tune in and listen to Merely Roleplayers, our sister podcast, run by the fantastic man sitting opposite me, Matt Boothman.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hi
there. I believe, as this episode of the Black Shore Arts Hour is released, we'll have just completed our first season.
Oh, my God.
So if you haven't started listening already to Merely Roleplayers by the time you listen to this... then you've got a whole season to binge in one go.
You can do a lovely binge. How wonderful. So, yeah, if you go to... where are the places we can find you, Matt?
So the main site is merelyroleplayers.podbean.com. And if you go either to the sidebar on a desktop machine or to the bottom of the page if you're on a mobile,
mm-hmm.
you'll find links there to subscribe on whatever podcasting thing you use,
all
whether
the platforms.
That's iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, any of those things, or you can listen right there on the website.
Streaming.
If you want to stream.
And I am biased in that I took part, but I have been listening and think it's absolutely fantastic, and it was so much fun to be a part of. And you can hear other regular Blackshore voices in that series, including obviously Matt himself, Vicky Weston, Alex and Strat are all partaking. And we're going to be recording the next series very soon.
We are. Yeah, I think when this comes out, we may have already recorded it,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be deep in the process of turning
Heavy.
It into something that is
that is suitable for your ear holes.
Palatable. Good. Well, so if you like role-playing games and fun mystery things, then tune in.
If you like theatre, well, because it's theatre.
It is theatre, we've decided. So, lovely. We hope you will be tuning in again to this, the Black Shore Arts Hour, next time. Until then, keep on arting. That's a thing now.
Okay, do I have to say it as well?
Yeah, you ready? Keep on arting. Bye.
Go on, treat yourself to something.
Subscribe to the Black Shore Arts Hour on your generic podcast resource.
You deserve it.